Because once you really care, and once you get desperately dependent, God is going to bring you to a crossroads in your life, and He's going to ask you to step out based on His word and His character and His promises, and it will scare you to death. And if He doesn't catch you, you are in big trouble.
Well, some of us have been there, right? You've gotten to a place of such extreme dependency on God that you are scared to death. And yet that's exactly where we often need to be as we live out a radical faith. And that's what Chip Ingram is going to unpack for us on this episode of the Pathway to Purpose podcast here, brought to you by FCCI. I'm Ken Powell, your host, and I pray that all of us are ready to dive deeper into this amazing journey of faith where God will show up and accomplish more than we could ever ask or think in our businesses, our homes, our communities, doing it all for His glory, His fame. This message from Chip was recorded about a decade ago at an FCCI international conference. And if you're listening to this by chance in early to mid-2024, then let me encourage you to register for this year's international conference, which is September 15 through 18. We've secured another tremendous lineup of great speakers, including Jordan Rayner, Donald Miller, Richard Blackaby, Crawford Loretz, and more to be announced soon. So don't miss out on it. You can register, learn more at conference.fcci.org. If you've missed the past few episodes with Chip Ingram, make sure you go back and listen to those as well. But here's Chip as he continues in this message about holy ambition with a segment on pursuing a radical faith.
I've heard the phrase often, we talk about finding God. And of course, we want to find God. But sometimes, when we use that kind of language, we get some things backwards, as though the responsibility, of course, is ours, but the real connection with God, we somehow think, is all on our shoulders. And I like to suggest that God is a searching God. I like to suggest that God is a seeking God. Jesus' life purpose, His purpose-driven life was, for the Son of Man, Luke 19, came to seek and to save that which was lost. So He was looking. He was searching. In John 4, when Jesus is talking to the woman at the well, and is it this mountain or that mountain, and when do you worship? And what, remember the answer? Lady, it's not about mountains. It's not about exterior worship. The Father is seeking. Literally, the word is pursuing, searching out those who do what? Worship Him in spirit and in truth. And of course, this side of the room, if you sat, you know that the eyes of the Lord are going to and fro throughout the whole earth, that He might strongly support those whose hearts are fully His. He's looking for one man, one woman, whose heart is fully His, that He could support that man or that woman to accomplish supernatural things. God is a searching God. He's a seeking God. And then you'll notice on your notes, I put one of my favorite verses. It's in Ezekiel 22. And it makes the point yet one more time. God speaking says, "And I searched for a man among them who would build up the wall and stand in the gap before me for the land, that I might not destroy it." That's an interesting verse, isn't it? God's searching. The eyes of the Lord. He's looking for a man, for a woman in this community or this country or this business or this church that would stand in the gap for Him so that He wouldn't have to exercise the judgment that is justly due. And my small confession would be, I guess I'm like you, I have bad days. And I lose perspective. And on my bad days, when I lose perspective, I start thinking things like, you know what, I don't think the world has ever been this evil. I don't think media has ever been this bad. I don't think, you know, families have ever disintegrated at this rate. You know, I just don't think the church has ever been quite so anemic. And then I go from there in my little, you know, pity party and warped perception to say, you know what, I don't think there's much hope for radical change. You know, things are just too far gone. They're too bad. They're too difficult. I mean, there's corruption here. There's corruption there. I mean, and then I go to this thought that it's never been as bad as it is right now. And that's my little warped view of history. And then I open my Bible, or on occasion when I'm real motivated, open my history book, and I recall that the world at times has been far worse than it is right now. I can think of a time when God called Moses to stand in the gap when the situation of God's people was way worse than it is now. I can think of a time when he asked a woman named Esther to stand in the gap when all of his people would have been completely annihilated. I can think of times where David, or during the exile, or during the Middle Ages, or if you've done any research on the Revolutionary War period in our country, a spiritual low like almost never before. And whether it was Esther or Moses or the midwives or the Apostle Paul, God finds a man and God searches out and finds a woman and he raises up someone at a different time in different places and he gets his will accomplished. And we're going to talk about a God who is not powerless. He's not worried. He's not inept. He's not on the edge of his throne biting his nails saying, Gabriel, Michael, I wonder what's going to happen down there on the planet. He is in absolute sovereign control, but he is searching for a man or a woman, many of whom may be in this room on this day, who would say, I will follow you with all my heart, with all my soul, with all my mind. I will, with no reservations and no conditions, be all the man or all the woman you want me to be. I'm following you, Christ. You show me what to do, and I will do it. I'm going to live in this little thing called time, but it's going to impact all eternity. And so I want you to know my heart is yours. And as you look on your notes, we've learned three conditions of allowing our hearts to get in that position, because I think it is a process. The first is, do you have a dislocated heart? And that asks and answers the question, do I care? The second prerequisite is, do you have a broken spirit? And that asks and answers the question, are you really dependent? And the third prerequisite for a holy ambition, for filling the gap, for making a difference, is a radical faith. Because once you really care, and once you get desperately dependent, God is going to bring you to a crossroads in your life, and he's going to ask you to step out based on his word and his character and his promises, and it will scare you to death. And if he doesn't catch you, you are in big trouble. But as you would read this book, is that not how he's worked throughout all time, using ordinary people to do extraordinary things? Moses, step out, go before Pharaoh. You got to be kidding. Esther, step out. No, I might die. Honey, you're going to die when we all die. Step out, Mordecai says to her. Our model is Nehemiah. Let's pick up the story in verse 11 of chapter 1. O Lord, let your ear be attentive to the prayer of this your servant and to the prayer of your servants who delight in revering your name. Give your servant success today by granting him favor in the presence of this man. I was cupbearer of the king. So Nehemiah has been praying and fasting. He's got a small group together, even before small groups were cool. And they've been praying and they've been fasting. And he's thinking like what you think. Here I am in Susa. I'm living in the lap of luxury. I have wealth, power, and position. I got a few guys. My heart is broken. It's dislocated. I really care. I've got a broken spirit. I'm praying to the God of heaven. He's all powerful. I've claimed some promises. And during this 4-month period of wrestling and talking and wise counsel, God has revealed to Nehemiah, Nehemiah, I'm going to answer your prayer. Great. And then the part that scared him, Nehemiah, I'm going to use you to answer your prayer. Early on, I bet he's thinking, not so great. Nehemiah, here's the plan as he listens to the still small voice of God. You know the culture. You know that if you ever go into the king's presence with a sad look or depressed, you know what, if he's having a bad day, he just has you killed and he gets another one. I mean, the goal of everyone in the king's court is to make the king a happy camper. So Nehemiah, here's the game plan. You can get his attention when he looks at you, look really sad, look really down, look really depressed, and then pray that he's having a really good day. Because if he really likes you, he'll say something like, hey, Nehemiah, what's wrong? And when he does, that's when you pop the question. And you know, all those whiteboard sessions you've been having with the guys, and you've been doing the thinking about how long it would take, and you know, the research satellite that looked at the broken walls, and how long you would have to be gone, and how much timber, and all of this isn't in the Bible, but you kind of get the idea. then what I want you to do is when he asks you how long you're going to need to be gone, give him a time based on your good thinking and your open, willing heart, because I'm always asking you to use your brain and your heart and your mind and your willing spirit to trust me. And then Nehemiah, I'm going to send you back and you're going to be the catalyst. You're going to be the point person for those walls to get restored, for those gates to get put up, for worship to occur again, and for my power and my presence and my agenda to occur back in Jerusalem. And that's the scene. And now you're going to get to watch like the camera opens up and it rolls in. And now we get to see how it plays out. In the month of Nisan, which is about April, in the 20th year of King Artaxerxes, when wine was brought before him, I took the wine and gave it to the king. I had not been sad in his presence before, so the king asked me, "Why does your face look so sad when you're not ill? This can be nothing but sadness of heart." Now notice, because of the culture, I was very much afraid. And in your notes, will you put a circle around the next word, but? I was very much afraid. The problem when God asks you to stand in the gap, when he asked me to stand in the gap, the moment this emotion comes, a lot of us get paralyzed and then we stop. We think, oh, if I'm this afraid, maybe not, God's not in it. I think when David had that slingshot and he was running out toward that giant, I think he's thinking, uh-oh. I think he was scared to death. I think the greatest things you'll ever do in your whole life, you'll be terrified. There's nothing wrong with being afraid. There's something big and bad wrong with letting that fear keep you from doing what God wants you to do. Why do you think it's put in the text here? He says, "I was very much afraid," but he didn't let it stop him. "I said to the king, 'May the king live forever.'" Little good PR never hurts. "Why should my face not be sad when the city where my fathers are buried lies in ruins and its gates have been destroyed by fire?" The king said to me, "What is it that you want?" Then I prayed to the God of heaven. This is one of those very quick prayers. Oh, Lord, help me on this one. "And I answered the king, 'If it pleases the king, and if your servant has found favor in his sight, let him send me to the city in Judah where my fathers are buried so that I can rebuild it.' Then the king with the queen sitting beside him asked me, 'How long will your journey take, and when will you get back?' It pleased the king to send me, so I set a time." Nehemiah cared. Nehemiah humbled himself before God, and then Nehemiah stepped out. And when you step out, what I call that is a radical step of faith. It is a condition for God greatly using ordinary people to do extraordinary things. The definition I give for a radical faith is choosing to step out to fulfill God's clearly defined will at great personal risk and sacrifice. Notice God's clearly defined will. This isn't you had tacos or enchiladas last night, or you heard part of someone on the radio and you just, without consulting anyone, just go off and do some wild tangent and say, "Well, I thought God spoke to me." Well, maybe it was the enchiladas. See, the Bible's really clear about what God's will is, and so you study the scriptures and you're open and you get wise counsel, and then it's very clear this is God's will for Jerusalem. It's very clear God's will for the church. The Great Commission is very clear. What he wants for families is very clear. So we're talking about stepping out to fulfill the clearly defined will of God in your time, in your season, in your generation, and here's the kicker, at great personal risk and cost. And as you study and as I study the heroes of Scripture, it's often done by very reluctant people. I think we get confused reading the Bible and think that all these people pound their chest, "I love God, I'm willing to give my life." And remember how Moses kind of backed into the job, didn't he? "You know, I'm slow of speech and slow of tongue, and, you know, send somebody else." Esther didn't want the job. Jonah, there's a real hero for you, you know? "Hey, Lord!" You know, but did God use him? Over 100,000 people, maybe well over that, were in the city of Nineveh. And God saved them all because a very reluctant person, even after he initially disobeyed, said, "You know what? Guess I can't run from you. I'm going to do what you called me to do." And we could go through, I mean, Barnabas, no one would even get near Paul. Barnabas risks his life. Over and over and over, the midwives, Peter, regular, ordinary people that are just like you. I think the lie of the enemy is to believe that God is going to do something great in the world, that there's this big holy ambition that you're thinking, even as you sit here, you know what? Yeah, I met someone at one of the breaks, or one of the person who taught the workshop. Yeah, I bet God could use them. But not me. I mean, I'm not spiritual enough. I mean, heavens knows, you know, I still have some of these issues I'm working through, and I'm not near as smart as some other people. And well, yeah, we have a business, but it's not like a big business. And of course, no matter what size your business is, you're comparing it to what? Someone who is way bigger. And so we kind of talk ourselves out of believing God could ever use a regular person. I got an email a day just before I came, and I'd love to share it with you. And if anyone speaks Arabic, you can translate it for me, except for the two or three little lines that are in English. This is from Pastor Ronnie. I was with Pastor Ronnie in July. Pastor Ronnie is a pastor in Iraq, in Baghdad. And Pastor Ronnie is a great man of God, but he's just as normal as you and me. And we were there with about 200 leaders from 22 Arabic countries, and we taught spiritual warfare. It's an exposition of Ephesians 6, and we put it on video, we put it on audio, we put it on notes, we put it on PDF files, and we taught all those people and had it all translated in Arabic. And then when we got done, all those guys took one of these that they could use in their own country, and now they teach it. And right now, he's taught about 100 people in Iraq about spiritual warfare. And then he's got the DVDs, and then he shows parts of them. And then after he teaches it, they do it in small groups, and all the workbooks and all the stuff. And can you imagine teaching on spiritual warfare in Iraq right now? And he had some big struggles, and so he asked me, and I gave him a book on comforting people, of dealing with their issues. And he read two chapters, and he said, could I have this book? I said, sure. He said, do you mind if I translate it? I said, no. He said, I'll have it done in a month. And he sent me the email of 50 Days of Spiritual Growing, Lessons on Leadership, and the book I gave him. This is the translation work. He's almost done. Now, that still does not, I mean, that's pretty heroic. But Ronnie's a regular guy, but as we were talking, because you know those guys that are real eager, like after every session, they have these theological questions. And so pretty soon, Ronnie and I, by like day three, we're buddies, you know. I get done, I'm thinking, where's Ronnie? And so big Ronnie comes, and he's got 20 other pastors from Iraq, and they've got a team. And he says, you know what, all the news in America, I know there's all the difficult things, but he says, you cannot believe what God is doing in Iraq right now. And he said, one of the hardest things for me was, and I will not pronounce his name right, but remember the number two guy that was killed? And if someone can say his name, yell it out quickly. Zakari? Zakari? Thanks, man. First, this is sovereignty of God on the front row where I can hear someone knows the name. And so where Ronnie lives is that's where that guy and his radicals hang out. And so they went to him, and it's an evangelical Bible teaching church, and had a cross on it. And they came to him and said, "Take down the cross." And he said, "Well, I don't want to take down the cross. I mean, we really believe in Jesus." And he said, "Let me give this to you real clearly. Take down the cross, or tomorrow we're going to bomb your church." And he said, you know, there's part of us in Iraq, you know, if they bomb our church, they bomb our church. But he said, our church, the way the buildings are connected, it's in a housing development, and we're just in the center of it. It would kill lots of non-Christians. And so I reluctantly went up, and I took down the cross. And, you know, every morning I'd pray to the Lord and think, Lord, this doesn't seem right, but I think it's the right thing to do. But you know, you've at times torn. It's an ethical issue. It's kind of gray. I mean, you know, people still know it's a church, but I don't want to take down the cross. I want to honor the Lord. I don't want my neighbors killed. And so, but every morning he'd get up and he'd pray. And he said one morning he was praying, and he just said as distinctly, and he said, this doesn't always happen, but the Lord just whispered, Ronnie, you can put up the cross today. And he said, in fact, I want you to do it between 2 o'clock and 4 o'clock in the afternoon. Zakari and his guys said, no one can be out on the, you can't go out on the streets. And I don't know what they did, but you know, and so he says, at 3 o'clock today, I want you to take the cross and put it back up on the church. So, I mean, this is like a remember the old Gunsmoke Westerns where there'd be the empty street? I mean, here, Pastor Ronnie, you know, he's scared. He was afraid. He said, but I believe the Lord spoke to me. And so he's got the cross and he's going to climb up and put it, and he's walking down the middle of the street. And he's thinking, I wonder if I'm going to make it to my church. And so he obviously did because he told me this story. So those ladies that are concerned about the ending, it's got a good ending, okay? So he's walking, and he says, so finally, 3 o'clock in the afternoon, I put it up. He says, that was on a Monday. And he said, I just had a very strong direction from the Lord to do that. That was Monday. On Wednesday morning, Zachary was killed. And as I read, the Lord said, I will take care of you. It's time now to put it back up. I'm going to deal with some issues. But don't you think that's a good picture of a radical step of faith? See, that's what I'm talking about. I'm not talking about doing outlandish, crazy stuff. I'm talking about when God clearly speaks. And this one, obviously, it's a real specific leading from God, so you got to be very clear. But it's all about very clearly fulfilling what God has us do. And I believe it takes a radical step of faith. And my experience in my own life and in the lives of people, this is where a lot of us, I think we pray, we get a broken spirit, we get dependent on God, and then God asks us to do something, and you get right to the edge, and we get so afraid, and we start thinking about money, we start thinking about security, we start thinking about what relationships, and you know, what will my husband think, or what will my wife think, or my parents will think, or there's business partners, or oh, what if we have to relocate, and that would mean we'd be farther away from the grandkids, and all these things happen, and I think we get right up to the edge of God doing something very, very significant, and then all those cultural trappings, sort of those little lines, start pulling us back in, and you end up pulled back into, just play it safe. I mean, you probably didn't really hear from God. I mean, besides, right? You're a normal person. You're an ordinary person. You're not, I mean, you may be smart, and you may be in the top 1%, but you're probably in the lower part of the 1%. There's probably, right? You know? And there's people that are really way more spiritual. Isn't this how we talk ourselves out of this? And God probably has someone with a lot more, you know, this is so crazy. I may be biblical, but it's so crazy. God could never want me to do this. And I would say if you read through the pages of Scripture, and whether it's throwing a scarlet rope over the end of a window or moving out into a river because God tells you to with a stick, or going before the most powerful man in the world and telling him to let the people go, or going to the number one public enemy radical Paul who's killing everybody because God told you and pray for him on the streets of Straight, you will find that the New Testament and the people of God are characterized by a very small band of people that take a radical step of faith.
If this podcast episode resonates with you, then consider linking arms with the hundreds of Christian business owners and leaders here at FCCI, as we want to support your calling to transform the world through Christ. Learn more about FCCI events, business leadership groups, training resources, and more at fcci.org. Thanks for listening, and may God empower your journey as you lead a company for Christ.